You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
Hello, folks. This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator right now and save $50 on your device purchase at majorityreport.ting.com.
It's Sam Cedar launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain. The Majority Report. With Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, October 26th. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is casual Friday. So casual. It's so casual this Friday, actually, that I'm not even talking right now. No, I'm talking right now, but not right now as you're listening to it. Now, that being said, many of you listen to this show on podcast, so I'm never talking when you hear me speak. Now, I don't want to blow anybody's mind, but it is, of course, the day before the weekend, so you'll have plenty of time to recoup if this shocks your system. But in fact, this is a pre-record. We are talking to Cliff Schechter, of course, because it is Casual Friday. Also, later in the program, we'll be talking to Matthew Film Guy, the guy named Matthew, who's also film-y and film guy-ish. But I will have been speaking to them Thursday night, which is actually not even now because I'm recording this intro Thursday day. This is all going to freak you out, but you're going to have the whole weekend to recover. For you members, you're also going to hear an extra 90 minutes of what I anticipate, and I'm saying this now because I'm recording it before the debate, will be a fascinating debate with what many YouTubers consider to be the preeminent libertarian philosopher on YouTube. His name is Stefan Malieu. And he is from Canada, I believe. I'm going to find out more tonight. And so you members will hear the full 90-minute interview, or I guess debate, that we did on Polypop. And it should be rather interesting. And certainly, you know, I don't know. This could be the final libertarian. I mean, I sort of feel like I've gotten to the end.
Final
of
the boss.
I've come to the end of the yellow brick road, as it were. And tonight we're going to meet Oz, and we're going to see if he's actually Oz or just like a dude who's behind a curtain, as it were. So check it out. I don't even know how it's going to go. So if you members enjoy that.
That'll be a separate file for members. So
you
will have 7 shows this week.
Are you serious? Seven shows?
5 regular.
This could be the last. Forget it. I know the election's coming up, but maybe I'll be back sometime around, I don't know, mid-December. Maybe that's what I'll do. Sit back, folks. Enjoy today's program. I know it's not live. I had something else to do that was very, 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 very important. Well, moderately important. But it's still, you're still getting your 5 shows the week. I can't believe it, for free. Kyle keeps telling me you're just doing too much content, but I can't help myself.
You get more shows the week Sam has to take 2 days than you do when Sam's in the office all 5 days.
I was actually in the office Wednesday, even though we didn't record one. But let me just say this, folks. This is a great time to remind you that it is your support that keeps the show alive. We lose members not every day, but most days, because people have financial hardship, because they're moving to a foreign country and no longer want to deal with American politics, or they become disgusted at me for some reason or another. That admittedly happens rarely. So if you can afford to purchase and support purchase a membership and support this program, even if you don't want the extra content, you're ensuring that you get a Friday show with Cliff Schechter. And also, if you are one of those people who listen once a week, I dip in on Fridays only, that's about it. Well, you can join our mailing list at majority.fm. Right at the bottom hand of your page, on the left-hand corner, there's a little box there. Put in your email address, and we're going to be hopefully sending at least weekly emails, which will give you highlights of the show that we've done that week, video clips, stories that we think you should read, stay in touch, you know, write occasionally, you never call, that type of thing. So check it out. And of course, you can support this show in other ways by your Amazon junk, you know, the whole deal. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Ting, Ting.com. That's T-I-N-G. Ting is a new mobile service that makes sense. It's all about bringing clarity, usability, and big savings to mobile phone users. It's built on the Sprint network. They have one simple plan, honest, fair pricing. It bills megabytes, minutes, and text messages separately. If you use less than anticipated, you're automatically credited the difference at the end of the month. Who else does that? Ting means big savings. You can head over to majorityreport.ting.com, check out their usage calculator, see how much money you're going to save. When you buy one of their devices, you get $50 off if you go through majorityreport.ting.com. Check it out. It just makes sense.
Libertas LLC, new media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.com.
So yes, Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. Cliff, welcome to the program. We're speaking now in the past, but about the future, and also about the past, as it were, today. Cliff, it's Casual Friday. How are you?
I'm doing great. That was very Doc Brown of you, by the way.
Doc Brown?
Doc Brown from Back to the Future.
Oh, all right.
Where we're going, we won't need roads.
There you go. I mean, maybe we will, maybe we won't, and where we are going. But so wait a second. Let's start with this, okay? Because obviously this week, each of these weeks, they seem like lifetimes now. At the beginning of the week, we had the debate, the third and final debate Then there was all sorts of denial for a day. And then a day or so ago, Richard Murdoch basically, well, I mean, you know, one is maybe a fluke. Two is let's get serious here about who these people are.
Yeah.
And then, of course, all during that time, you know, we're in the shadow of the election. And there was also something that I wanted to talk to you about, President Obama's off the record, on the record interview with the Des Moines Register. That back and forth is less relevant to me than what he said. But first off, let's just start with this, because I thought I would be calling you in New Hampshire. But in fact, no, you're in Ohio. What we now know, it will be, you know, probably the epicenter of the election, as it were. And what were you doing in
Hampshire? That way. I'm tricky. You know, I was in one of the five other swing states everybody's talking about. I was there because I
That's
do
a
some
brilliant
work
marketing with... strategy, incidentally. You're always the guy to go to about the about the swing states.
Aren't I? Yeah, it's crafty. It's crafty of me. I'm working with a PAC, super PAC. It's sort of it's a combo called Friends of Democracy that is highlighting really good progressive candidates who don't take who don't sit there and suck at the well of corporate money and are trying to sort of, you know, elect good people over very corrupt Republicans. And so in this case, there's been a number around the country that I've gone to see. But in this case, we've got two just fantastic candidates in New Hampshire. Carol Shea Porter, former congresswoman, very progressive, who was knocked out in the wave in 2010. And then Ann Custer, who I got to meet with yesterday, as well as her staff, both staffs. And she's fantastic, too. And as of right now, polling shows them both to be a little bit ahead. You know, they've got this sort of pretend New England moderate thing going on with Ann Custer's, who she's running against, Charlie Bass, who's a former congressman who lost to somebody else and regained his seat. And, you know, he does that fake New England moderate thing that Scott Brown does that doesn't really exist anymore. So they're like, yeah, I'm right wing on everything, but half the time I'm pro-choice.
I saw an interview with Scott Brown where they asked him about control of the Senate. He said the question was to him, "Do you care who controls the Senate?" And Scott Brown was like, "No, I don't care who controls the Senate. Why would I care about that? I mean, it's
right. He's just yeah, it is. I mean, so Charlie Bass plays that game too. At least the guy you could say." Who beat Carol Shea Porter, who she's now running against, you know, who she's taking on again. Frank Ginta is just a lunatic who doesn't belong as a representative in New Hampshire, which is a pretty moderate swing state. He, you know, he was swept in by the tide in 2010. Mm-hmm. So they're both in great shape. Simpson Bowles, which we'll be talking about, came and endorsed Charlie Bass. They decided to get in the election game, start endorsing people because he's such a tool for everything Simpson Bowles. He also voted for the other one. What was it? La Tourette Cooper. That was even worse than Simpson Bowles. You know, there were so many of these things floating around. I hate just using the names because I know not everybody keeps track of what each of them do. And I don't blame you, frankly, because it's hard to keep track. But let's just say that one was even more punitive to Social Security and Medicare and on cuts, the La Tourette Cooper one. So, you know, I was really glad to be there, and we've got a great chance. Those are two. I mean, in the end, we need to get President Obama reelected for a variety of reasons. But if we don't get the Ann Custers and Carol Shea Porters and Elizabeth Warrens elected, who will be leaders of the progressive cause, then we might as well not bother, frankly.
Right.
So that's what that was a really good, you know, really good meetings for me, and I was really excited to be there.
I
also got to go to Concord. Which New Hampshire, which, as you may know, is the place where we fired the first revolutionary shots. So that was pretty cool, too. I can't hold a straight face. Remember when Michelle Bachmann said that?
I didn't realize she was talking about Concord. I think I missed that. Was she there campaigning in New Hampshire?
Yep, she was. And she was like, I'm so honored to be here where the first
two
revolutionary
Concords
shots
in New England.
Were fired.
That's not right. There's probably more than two.
Probably is. That's just not fair to her, I know.
No.
I know.
Is she going to win her? What is the status with her?
It's tied. I mean, it literally is statistically tied. I mean, I think I saw the last one I saw. I think she might have been up by 1 point.
Interesting.
And you know, and there's enough undecided. She was up something like 47, 46, something like that. There are enough undecided that she could definitely lose.
Interesting.
She could lose. Steve King could lose. He's running against Christy Vilsack, wife of the former governor of Iowa,
mm-hmm.
And Alan West could lose. I mean, that would be amazing if those three jokers lost.
That would be fun. And let me, I mean, there's no chance for the Democrats. I mean, is there a chance that the Democrats will pick up the House? I mean, I haven't read much lately, but everything I saw, over the 3-4 weeks ago was that it's highly unlikely. The biggest culprit was redistricting and maybe a little bit what happened in California, where they had these sort of runoff style primaries where actually we have two Republicans running for a Democratic seat type of thing.
Right. And I think also, President Obama's first debate, his numbers, let's face it, the numbers at the top affect the numbers lower down very
right.
much. I think that hurt it too, but it seems like he's now rebounding. It seems there is actually, and people are starting to talk about it, even the Republicans are trying to deny it. It's pretty obvious in the numbers you're starting to see again, both in the states and nationally, that whether it was a third debate bounce or a combo second debate, third debate, you know, Murdoch thinking rape is okay bounce, I don't really know, but whatever it is, that's happening. And I think that will help, because in swing states like where I just was, like New Hampshire and like Ohio and places like that, obviously how people are doing higher up, particularly also if there's Senate races, that's helpful. I mean, in a state like Wisconsin, in a state like Massachusetts, in a state like Ohio, if you've got good progressives at the top of the ticket that inspire people to come out and vote, that can only be helpful in swing races in those states too.
That's the thing that people, I think, that, I mean, to me, that's the story of what has happened in the month of October, really, is that there was less the story of the sort of, to the extent that there was any sort of changes in the polls that were substantial or significant, which I think there was, you know, maybe a couple of points for Romney here or there, and in balancing back out with President Obama, was, it seems to me, to have been a function primarily of enthusiasm.
Right.
And turnout, because we don't have a lot of swing voters. A lot of them still haven't made up their mind. They won't make up their mind, I think, until that day. And
maybe not even that day.
And maybe not even that day. But that it had to do with changing the models of who will turn out, who is likely to turn out, because of increased enthusiasm and I guess less fear of Mitt Romney, both in terms of people who are leaning towards Romney but weren't sure, or people who would never vote for President Obama but were thinking that, you know, Romney was too weak. And then it
right.
seemed like at the debate at the beginning of this week was that he, you know, weak Mitt Romney showed up, and despite the best wishes of the conservatives that nobody would watch this debate, and I thought it would be less well watched than it was. I mean, it was the 53 lowest.
53 million. It was less than the others, but still, that's a lot.
Yeah, you're still talking. The numbers I saw were actually even a little bit higher than that. But
okay.
Nevertheless, you're still talking about 53 million people. And
well,
I think
yeah.
the other debates got around 60 million, right? I mean, so.
Yeah, in the 60s. I mean, so this one was still very well 10% watched.
10% less.
And again, I think what Romney did in that first debate, I think there were a whole lot of people, you know, among the undecided, so not a lot, but among that group, that there were some people that were really sort of, they should be Romney voters. My guess is they voted for Bush. They might have voted for Obama in 08 because of the economy, but they generally are sort of Republican-leaning voters, who are predisposed to go in that direction. But he'd been so weak, and he spent literally, since the moment Clint Eastwood got up on that stage, it was like one gaffe after another, one stupid thing after another, one picture on a jet ski after another, that they never really got a sense that this guy could even be like, even had a pulse. And because the President Obama performed so badly in that first debate, and he came off as, you know, at least a reasonable alternative, I think they went that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think there are other undecided voters who are sitting there. And, you know, we make fun of them, and I make fun of them, because I think at some point it's sort of like, make up your mind already, this is ridiculous.
Well, we make fun of them. We make fun of them because they also, we know they're not listening.
Right. I mean, they're the ones who go on TV especially, because I just think they want to be on TV.
Right.
But I think there are some people that are busy as hell at their work. They're working two jobs or doing whatever.
Sure.
And they're not necessarily disengage. They're not going to be engaged ever the way people like you and me are. It's not their favorite thing in the world, but they try to follow a little bit.
Right.
And I think some of those folks, and I think some of them probably watched the third one and maybe the second one and saw such commanding performances by President Obama that now we're seeing some of that in the polls. So, it's interesting to see what's happened. I think that what's changed is, You can, you know, history I always find is one of the best sort of indicators of what is going to happen. So many people forget to look at history. But that you have to take that also and realize that times change, numbers change. And there's simply no doubt we're more polarized right now than we were 20 years ago or 30 years ago. There are a lot more people that people may claim their independence, but they're in one camp or the other.
Right.
So I think that affects some of all of this too, how to handicap and how much numbers will move and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's but in the end, I would say if you look at it overall, those numbers, you know, in New Hampshire, in here in Ohio, you've seen a number of polls again that are starting to show mid single digit leads for President Obama in states like Colorado and Virginia and Ohio. You know, the bad polls are starting to be ones where he's only up by a point or two, mm-hmm. whereas for a while there, the good ones were where he's up by a point or two, and the bad ones he was either tied or losing. So, you know, and that's what's happened nationally too. So, I can, to me, my sense is there's been a bit of a shift, and that seems to be picked up by most of the people that look at this stuff every day, the Nate Silvers of the world too. So,
and we should also note that in terms of the Electoral College, there has never been one day during this entire campaign where President Obama wasn't handily beating Mitt Romney in the Electoral College. I mean, you know, in terms of the way we do those projections, in terms of a state-by-state polls, there's never been one day. There's never one day that it's actually been relatively close. I mean, at least in the last 6 months. I mean, since we know that Mitt Romney was the nominee, I imagine there's been some time early on that that President Obama hadn't gotten the requisite 270. So that's one thing that we should point out, and this is relevant because, you know, there's been and I somehow missed it because I guess I just wasn't paying attention to the news. But after the debate, there was this sort of flutter of stories about, or maybe it was last week too, because I can't remember. They, you know, all the different narratives that they were pushing, but that Mitt Romney has the momentum. And this there was a good piece by Jonathan Chait in New York Magazine, saying this is a bluff, and of course it's a bluff, because
absolutely.
First of all, everybody always does this, don't they?
Everybody does, and I guess this has been one of those things that's annoyed me for so many years now, where people act like Karl Rove is like this Rasputin, this Svengali, you know what I mean, who can just make things happen, you know, and people almost fear uttering his name. What he is a guy.
We're going to edit that out, incidentally.
Good. What he is a guy who's like, you know, who has studied politics relentlessly, is an obsessive dork who sat around and just pored over God knows what. But he, you know, he's somebody who, you know, also, well, why even sugarcoat this at all? He's a sociopath. I don't think he has any remorse or any. There's just nothing that makes the man lay awake at night. So in the end, he's willing to do things that other people aren't willing to do. He's willing to take chances other people aren't. And it pays off sometimes. I don't know how he hasn't ended up in prison yet for a variety of the things he did, like the attorney scandals and the rest. And so he's not a hard guy to figure out. You just look, from his days working in Alabama and Texas, there are these patterns. You know, among them, politicizing justice so you can get negative headlines about your opponent, which is why the attorney scandal fit in perfectly. This is what he did in Texas. Mm-hmm. It made complete sense. The voter suppression stuff, he won by doing that in Alabama and Texas and those states. He won by getting state laws changed that would allow him to spend as much money as he needed to. Wow, Citizens United, what a shocker. You know, I'm sure he had nothing to do with that during times he met with Scalia and people like that. And this is another one of those patterns of his, which he believes you can create a bandwagon effect by sitting there and saying, my guy's winning. And that will get better press reportage, and that will lead more people who want to be with the winner to vote for the winner. And one very comical example of all of this, really, in the end, his buddy Scalia and those guys saved him in 2000 because he was spending the last week in that election in California while, you know, just wandering around telling everybody that Bush was going to win 320 electoral votes. I'll never forget this. And you know, not only did they barely lose Florida, they lost Iowa by like a point or less. And I'm missing somewhere else, New Mexico. I mean, had they been spending any time in the places where they needed to be, they could have won that election potentially outright. But instead, they had Bush in California because he was so obsessed with trying to look like he knew what he was doing. And Bush, of course, got crushed in California. And it did no good. They were never going to win California. And really, his arrogance almost cost him it. So this is just that. It's all this sort of, you know, that all the sort of pretend that now, they all were up. It's just pretend. They're not.
Well, I got to push back on this a little bit. Okay.
Okay.
And I'll
go
tell
for
you
it, dude.
Because yes, Karl Rove in California, ridiculous, trying to spin this notion that they are that cocky, they are that sure about their victory. I think, frankly, that 2000 showed exactly why you do that. Because at the end of the day, I don't believe that a guy like Karl Rove does this to change the outcome of the vote per se. Because I think what he's trying to do is change the media narrative. Because it's the media that buys into this stuff. I've never heard of any, you know, let's put it this way. There's nobody who does not know who to vote for 2 weeks out from election that is really aware of this idea of like Mitt Romney's got the momentum. I don't buy that. However, it was because of this sort of aura that Bush was coming back and surging and could win, I think, frankly, is what allowed for him to basically be selected by the Supreme Court. I mean, if you look at their reasoning, if they allow the count to continue in Florida, if they allow the count to continue in Florida, it will prejudice people against the presumptive winner, who was supposedly Bush. And
I will agree with you to the level, because obviously I disagree with the notion overall. I'll agree with you to the level that because they made it to that situation,
yes,
it helped.
Right, so why not do it?
But I don't think that situation, well, it depends how you do it. There's no reason to not do what he's doing right now. Absolutely,
right,
I agree.
Right.
What I'm saying is it's also how you use your resources. If it affects how you use your resources, if you blow something like millions of dollars on ads in California and you have your guy spending time out there when maybe a trip or two extra to Iowa, New Mexico, or even Florida, which you have to remember, even with all the voter suppression, everything that went down, they ended up that count by being over, initially being just up by over a little over 500 votes. And had he been well down, even with all the purging of people and everything, had they been down 15, 20,000 votes, it wouldn't have mattered. He could have been talking about Paul he wanted to be, and Bush could have been Mr. Confident in California. They couldn't have undone that big a number of votes.
Okay, so resolve that you're not putting any resource into it. There's no reason not to do this. It creates this environment. And also, you know, look, there's stories out there about Tag Romney and a bunch of Bain people who work at Bain sitting on the board of some companies that own voting machines in two counties that are going to be in Ohio, some that are in Colorado. We know of all these other suppression tactics that are going on. It never is a bad idea to project the idea that you're going to win. And also, frankly, what you don't want is, if you think it's going to be even remotely close and you're still fibbing about this, what you don't want is your troops to be demoralized. And it's quite possible, look, that there are people who've seen internal polls in the Romney campaign, and they're like, highly unlikely anything's going to happen. And so you do the opposite. I mean, all that makes sense. Now, with all that said, what do you think about, I mean, I know what you think about Michael Burdock. I mean, excuse me, Richard Murdoch. I don't know who Michael Burdock is, but I imagine.
He's got to be a pretty cool guy, though.
Yeah, no, that's a good guy. But Richard Murdoch, I know what you think about that guy, but what do you think about, what are the implications on the election? Is there going to be any?
I definitely think there could be. I mean, there is a point where it all just adds up. It seems like we've already been there. I've lost track now of some of the anti-women things Republicans have done or conservatives have done, you know, just 6 months ago, because there's been so much of this stuff. Like, does anybody remember the whole Komen thing anymore? It almost seems like it was like 5 years ago.
Right.
You know, so at some point, And remember, this isn't the only time this happened. If I'm correct, there was a state legislator in Wisconsin a few weeks ago who said, you know, my daddy told me that women rape easy. Do you remember that came
right,
up?
Right.
It was a guy Paul Ryan had endorsed, and oops, you know. I mean, there is a point where you start feeling like that this is the way these guys obviously talk to each other. It's what they obviously believe, and that's not within the mainstream of American thought.
Do you think are the implications for this that it's going to impact women who are swing voters, or do you think that the impact is going to be in that it's going to motivate the base to get out more?
I think you could have both. I think there's no doubt the base on the Democratic side, among which are a large group are single women. I mean, if they're not they have the daylight scared out of them by listening to these guys talk on the other side, these can be U.S. senators. People need to remember Murdoch, Aiken. These are people that can decide who sits on the Supreme Court if they're elected, and
right.
other federal courts. They are crazy people, and this is the role they would have. So that's that is important. And I think at the same time, it also can affect people on Romney's side. I think there may be an interesting sub demographic. I don't know if that's the right term. But of sort of somewhat conservative women who yet use birth control like 99% of women and are sort of, pro-choice but not completely or conflicted on it. And are the types of people that often would go Republican but they've gone so far off the map on this stuff
right.
that they may just say, oh, my God. And so, I could see that happening. It'd be interesting because over the next week to see if polling starts showing already after that second and third debate when women's issues were mentioned, unlike during the first debate, President Obama started really talking about birth control and choice and things like that, and Lilly Ledbetter. You could see that gap started opening up again. Let's see if it opens up some more. I would expect that there would be implications from this just because – maybe some people had forgotten what Aiken said. Maybe it had been just long enough that you're not in Missouri or the Missouri media markets. You're starting to get over that, and then this. And this has had saturation
coverage. Right, and
you
can write off one freak, right?
Right.
I mean, you can write off one freak as, well, okay, that's a freak. But, the problem that the Republicans have is now they have this attitude towards women very explicitly is now represents 10% of their candidates. This is 10% who have been explicit about this notion that, look, rape, there's rape and there's rape. Let's be
right.
This type of attitude. And this is now represents 10% of their candidates running for the Senate. I mean, it's stunning. It's stunning. And I think, it'll be interesting to see. I got to imagine it's going to have some impact. And certainly, look, Mitt Romney doesn't want to spend his week of closing arguments addressing this and having to worry about those ads
that are
still playing.
Right.
His ads are still playing in Indiana for Murdoch. He's the only person he cut ads for.
Right, and that's what's so great about it. He cut ads for him. Those ads are still up. He doesn't know how to handle it. He hasn't taken those ads down.
Can't because Murdoch wants him
right.
to still
and
up.
He hasn't unendorsed.
Right.
They ran away from Aiken. It's almost like he got played here because with Aiken, at least he wasn't already on the record supporting him.
Right.
But what do you do? So he's in. They're in much tough. So they've just decided to sort of try to ride out the storm. I don't think it's going to work very well. And I think, and then the implications in the Senate too. I mean, if you're Elizabeth Warren, if you're Tammy Baldwin, if you're Heidi Heitkamp, if you're Shelley Berkeley. Look at all the women who are running in important Senate races that are close. I'm not sure. To be honest with you, from having been in New Hampshire, seeing the ads, seeing the way things are being talked about up there, it's almost like Scott Brown's obituary is being written. Well, I mean, I would say to anybody listening, you have to get out and vote for a variety of reasons. If you live in, I don't care, even if you live in Massachusetts. So please do. Don't take anything for granted. But now the polls are starting to show her on average up 6 or 7 points. I think that one is pretty close to done. But some of those other races I'm talking about, Heidi Heitkamp is a margin of error race. I think Berkeley in Nevada last I saw was up by about 1 point on average. This could make a difference. I mean, Claire McCaskill's race, obviously, and it may end up losing the Senate race in Indiana.
I think that's the thing that people tend to forget sometimes is that, you know, one of the things that's really hurt Scott Brown is, of course, is that you're talking about swinging the Senate. And so people can actually run. Senate candidates around the country can run against Richard Murdoch as much as they can their own guy, because, you know, that's the implications of it.
This guy is going to be running, or at least potentially chairing a committee. The same with Aiken.
Exactly.
I mean, you want these guys making decisions in all aspects of your lives. Yeah. So I think that there's a number of ways, from the Senate races to the presidential race to that specific Senate race in Indiana. The truth is that if and when Joe Donnelly gets there, you and I are going to hate him.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
He's the next Ben Nelson. I mean, he was like that in the House.
Do you think he's going to be the next? At least he's not going to be the next Evan Bayh. I mean, I
think he's going to be worse than Evan Bayh.
Oh, really?
Well, Evan Bayh was pro-choice. He believes in the exceptions for rape and incest, but he's anti-choice. He's anti-gay rights. Evan Bayh was terrible on economic issues and was all pro-Iraq war, was decent on social issues. This guy's not even good on those. This guy's a blue dog.
Yes.
Evan Bayh was more of a New Dem, and so I think he's worse than Evan Bayh. I think, he's Ben Nelson territory, where he'll vote probably at best 55-58% of the time with the Democratic Party.
Interesting.
But if you're trying to make sure you hold on to the Senate right now, I suppose there's time to really dislike Joe Donnelly later.
Right. So. Exactly. He will give us many a Friday to talk about, I am sure. And
yes.
With that, let's go on to the issues of Social Security, Medicare, the grand bargain, are, you know, the bone that we will not let go of. And I know that you were talking about the recent polls that went out there. Why don't you start with, because I know talk about these polls, because
yep.
This, I think, sets the context for what we're seeing, for what we're going to see next, not necessarily in the fall, but come January, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big, you know, a sort of coalition of some pollsters and working with USA Action, a progressive group, did some polls, really of swing states right now to see sort of where the president is. That was sort of the main thing, but also certain key issues. And so they asked some very interesting questions. And so in a New Hampshire poll, here's a classic example where President Obama was up by 3 points on the issue of Medicare. 57% opposed privatizing Medicare, 21% in favor, which you're still talking about a 3-1 negative to positive. Social Security is even more striking. 89% opposed cutting Social Security, 6% in favor. Think about that for a second. That was New Hampshire. Ohio, which had President Obama up by 2.
That is the live free or die state. The new state of Libertonia, or whatever it is, for the libertarians up there.
Yes, it is a very libertarian state, so libertarian that 89, let's call it 9 out of 10, people want to keep their Social Security benefits 100% as they are. And the number was exactly the same on that side in Ohio. You had 59% opposing privatizing Medicare, 89% opposing cutting Social Security, and only 5% in favor. So, I mean, this is what we've talked about, you and I. I mean, it's not only is this the kind of thing that is very smart. It's very important in terms of policy, but it just is a simple political no-brainer. To stand up, the way the right is so good at making whatever garbage they're spewing, and they believe making that, whatever their position is, the center of the debate. Now I guess being anti-choice, but believing women should have the right to an abortion in cases of rape and incest is somehow the center
mm-hmm.
on that issue, which they've tried to move that one over. This is the kind of stuff they do. Well, this is something the left needs to learn. You know, on this issue, President Obama and other Democrats have allowed this stuff to become the so-called center when it's not, the Simpson-Bowles garbage. This is the center. These are two swing states that at this point lean Obama, but are two of the 7, 8, 9 states that will decide this election.
Look,
moderate states in this country, and let me do my
now requisite qualifier, since we are within 10 days of the election, which is Mitt Romney, I believe, would be a disaster, an emboldened Republican Party, a disaster. But that said, this is not this.
I mean, I think he'd massively cut Social Security way beyond anything you're talking
and
about.
Medicaid, Medicare, he's already on record.
Yes, he is.
Medicare. That said, this President Obama is pursuing this. He is not being subjected to this. He is pursuing this in terms of cutting Social Security. I believe that in his mind, his legacy, this is part of his legacy. And
the bargain, yeah, the overall grand bargain.
Look, he wanted to have this interview with the Des Moines Register off the record. The Des Moines Register sort of shamed the campaign into putting it on the record. And this is what he said at one point during the thing. In the short term, the good news is that there's going to be a forcing mechanism to deal with what is the central ideological argument in Washington right now. And that is, how much government do we have and how do we pay for it? So when you combine the Bush tax cuts expiring, this is the president speaking, the sequester in place, the commitment of both myself and my opponent, at least Governor Romney claims that he wants to reduce the deficit. But we're going to be in a position where I believe in the first 6 months, we are going to solve that big piece of business. So we're talking about January 1. It will probably be messy. It won't be pleasant. But I am absolutely confident that we can get what is the equivalent of the grand bargain. Essentially, I've been offering the Republicans for a very long time, which is $2.50 worth of cuts for every dollar in spending and work to reduce the cost of our health care programs. Now, look, here's the thing that's what's going to happen. And, you know, I don't know why it took me until now for this to occur to me. I'm not saying right now, but over the past week. And, you know, I've been debating is whether or not I talk about
this. You like to take your time. Nobody
wants me to be a Debbie Downer right now.
Right.
All right. But the thing that we have been talking about, and the thing that I think even last week we were talking about with some measure of satisfaction, was that it was clear the Democrats have now adopted the strategy of letting the Bush tax cuts expire, using that leverage and come back with middle class tax cuts to force the Republicans to either vote against that or accept them, right?
Yep. Yes.
Now, that leverage doesn't just work with Republicans. It is equally as difficult for a Democrat to vote against middle class tax cuts. In fact, in some ways, harder. Because,
oh, I would say so.
Because they have been saying we want middle class tax cuts to the exclusion of tax cuts for the wealthy. Republicans
right.
at least have the cover of no, this doesn't go far enough. So that leverage works with the Democrats as well. So if the president puts on the table an omnibus deal, a grand bargain, if you will, that includes middle class tax cuts and cuts to Social Security, even though they have nothing to do with the deficit by statute. They can't. It's impossible for them to. Even
right.
though it's impossible for Social Security to go bankrupt, even though these cuts will increase the poverty level among seniors, and then also bound to increase the economic pressure of their children, some of whom they will be able to, if they can just scrape by, to not allow their parents to go into poverty. And so this is what the grand bargain is going to be.
Yep.
And it may also include Medicare in this. And there's a reason why we heard one brief shining moment, to use a phrase I've been using this week slightly, about Joe Biden saying, I guaranteed flat out no cuts to Social Security. And that was the last we ever heard of it.
Right. I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, we got that sort of one moment, and I think we all talked about it a lot, analyzed it, tried to sort of see if this is, you know, where he's taking us. And it seems like, as always, we've got some – I mean, they never fully commit. They find a kind of way to – you know, and it seemed like Biden did commit that one time.
Yep.
But then we're having off-the-record conversations with the Des Moines Register. I mean, and again, I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here. I think in every one of these things I do, I try to be so clear – because I really do think the stakes are enormous, and I really do think right now that there's two different worldviews out there, and there's one that sees government playing a positive role in society. Not enough of one for you and for me and for common sense and for how prosperous this country was for the middle part towards the end of the last century, but at least understands the government has a role. And there's another side that's filled with people that used to be just John Birchers. I mean, people like Todd Akin and people like Richard Murdoch, they used to be the guys that ran for leadership in the John Birch Society and places like that. They were activists. They didn't actually run for office because they never could have gotten through the process, especially pre-primary when party elders chose. They wouldn't have gotten there. Now they're running for office, and some of them are getting elected. Plenty of them are. And so it's a frightening time in terms of that. You put Mitt Romney in there, who literally, I don't think, believes most of the stuff they believe, but has absolutely zero spine and couldn't care less as long as he's president, and you're looking at disaster.
I agree.
Guarantee
totally.
Right now, we'll bomb Iran, and Simpson Bowles will seem like a pleasant thing compared to what they'll do to the social safety net and the tax cut they'll give and the Supreme Court justices they'll foist upon us. And in every one of those roles in government, from the people who are at the top of cabinets to mid-level cabinet positions, the people that make policy and whatever, you're going to find nuts. You're going to find Robert Bork, who's advising Romney on legal issues. You're going to find Ralph Reed advising him on theology issues. These are people who advise Romney right now. So keep all that in mind. Doesn't mean that everybody shouldn't be ready the moment that President Obama hopefully gets elected.
I mean, no, I think, what everyone I think should do right now is simply write your congressman. The handwritten letter still is reflexive in their minds of a lot of different voters out there, and say, I'm going to cast a ballot for you this week. And if you ever vote to cut Social Security that has 80 some odd percent approval rating, know that not only will I vote against you next time, but I will do everything in my power to use all of my efforts to make sure that you do not win.
That's right. And here's the, I mean,
they get enough of those people, enough of those letters. It's, we need to have a congressional delegation, a Democratic delegation, because this is what I can assure you in this grand bargain. Right. It's going to be those Tea Partiers who are not going to sign on to this. And Boehner's going to have to go to the Democrats, and the Democrats, I promise you, folks, the Democrats in the House, if this grand bargain goes through, it will be the Democrats in the House who will have the highest amount of votes for it. Is exactly how it's going to have to go. And that leverage works just as much.
I mean, that's one of the biggest points where you can stop this thing, because it's much tougher to threaten a president of the United States in this way because of all the issues I just mentioned, because there's so much on the table. But one member of Congress?
Yeah.
You can kick out a member of Congress and get somebody new,
right,
and it ain't a big deal. It generally, unless you get very unlucky where there's only a one-seat, majority in the House, which happens virtually never, then they'll know those threats are real.
Yeah.
And you go to your certain senators, too. And I would encourage people to send letters to encourage Chuck Schumer to stand up for what he said he might do and to block this.
Yeah,
and let him know that you'll be out there. You'll be his free campaign
because
chorus,
the Senate Republicans
pushing for him to be a leader in the Senate.
The Senate Republicans, they will vote for this. The thing is that we're going
David
to see
Koch
we're going to see
permission.
We're going to see
gonna
that the we're going to see tax hikes on the that's the thing is that Schumer's vow basically is only in play until the beginning of the year, because once the Bush tax cuts expire, then the playing field changes, because then Schumer has already been fulfilled. His vow, taxes are going to go back to Clinton era levels. That's already been fulfilled. And so now the next stage is, how do we get these tax cuts for middle class? Well, if we got to cut Social Security, or not even cut, we're not cutting, we're tweaking. We're tweaking with the cola and the,
it's
that
tweak
type of thing. But I look, Cliff, we've run out of time. And I think we've said enough about this. We will be talking about this ad nauseum, I would imagine, over the next 4 or 5 months.
True. And in the meantime,
hopefully
we'll
Mitt Romney's not president.
The
conversation is slightly
him.
Different.
Right now we'll be making fun of him in the meantime, and hopefully we can keep making fun of him even after he loses. Because I'm going to miss Mitt Romney in that way. I like making fun of him.
Yeah, I know. But there will always be a new Mitt Romney.
There will. I mean, and there will always be somebody who thinks rape isn't such a bad thing.
There you go.
My guess is we'll meet somebody new in the Republican Party next week. Who knows? That young buck getting ready to move up in the party right now. And knows that these days, it's not enough to be anti-choice, love guns, hate taxes. You got to be pro-rape.
And on that note, Cliff, we'll speak to you next week. The 3 days, 4 days, 5 days before the election.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sam. Always a pleasure, buddy.
Thanks, Cliff.
Time for a report. We are the majority. Not the sheeple. We are the majority. We the people. Why do we walk the walk? Why do we talk the talk? Why don't we just stand by? That's why.
All right, folks. We are back, Sam Cedar, on the Majority Report. It is Casual Friday. We've got in just a moment, Matthew, film guy Matthew will be with us. Before we get there, let me remind you folks that this episode, this special Friday episode is, well, I don't know how special it is, but it's a typical Friday episode. But this episode is sponsored by Hold Your Nose and Vote Obama2012.com. For true liberals, the Obama administration has been somewhat of a disappointment, to say the least. But for the sake of the Supreme Court, we must vote Obama, and frankly, for many of the reasons that we just talked about with Cliff. Visit Hold Your Nose and Vote Obama2012.com. Topics include torture, whistleblowers, the kill list, and Michael Vick. Items with their logo available on the site as well. Hold Your Nose and Vote Obama2012.com. And ladies and gentlemen, we have a link there on the site at majority.fm if you forget that URL. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, last week, well, maybe I should save this for when he's on. Maybe what we should do right now is simply play the Matthew Film Guy theme song.
Matthew, the film guy, is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such themes. Maybe I'll watch one and learn a few things. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, film guy.
Yes, Matthew, film guy. Are you there, Matthew?
Yep, I'm here, Sam. Thanks for having me back.
Now, I don't know if people, maybe people don't pick up on this because they don't know you as well as I do. Or maybe they don't pick up on it because they don't know the backstory. But last week, huh?
I said, oh, I think they pick up on it, but go ahead.
All right, well, maybe people are picking up on it. Matthew, last week, as I was introducing Isabel Gillies, who also does the weekly, I guess, film recommendation for me, for people who are first-time listeners, I am not allowed to leave the house to watch a movie anymore because I have a wife and a child. I don't know if other people have that same experience. It's certainly been the experience for me now, basically, since for 7 years. So what I do is I ask people to give me a recommendation for Netflix streaming or Amazon streaming that I can watch. And Isabel is one of our regulars. Matthew Film Guy is one of our regulars. Isabel, apparently, I skipped Matthew last week, and I got some very angry, or what you corrected me, hurt emails from you.
That's right. I'm not angry. I'm not angry.
Are you really that hurt? Are you really that much of a baby?
I knew I was asking for that from you. Any attempt at true emotion is met with a little resistance from you, isn't it, Sam? That's
well,
all right.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I mean, first off, A, look, yes. I don't appreciate any real emotion. But secondly,
I forgot.
I also really don't appreciate that type of whiny, namby-pamby stuff. Come on. Come on.
Sam,
so somebody cuts
whining.
You in line. What are we? You, like, I went on a walking trip with Myla's elementary school class the other day. And that's all they did, too. But they're in second grade. Billy cut in front of me. All right, kid. Whatever.
Now, listen, Sam, you can read the wording of my email. I was not whining. I was asking if you were in some way dissatisfied with my performance, if there was a reason why you preferred Isadora.
How come
to
Billy
me?
Gets to cut in front of me? That's what that is.
All right. There's maybe a bit of that. I'll cop to that, and I apologize. But, hey, I like doing this thing, and I want to do it well. So.
Well, no, you do it well. You do it well. You don't have to be so sensitive. My
yeah,
God.
And look, I like Ida Bell. She's good, you know.
What?
When she does
what did
it
you call
week.
Her?
Isadora.
Come on. Really?
No,
really?
But I
really? Come on.
No, listen, I really like her. I love that airhead, self-involved character she plays. It's
whoa,
great.
Whoa! Dude, you are very, very, very lucky that she does not know how to play a podcast. Because
yeah,
if she hears this, she's
going to
be,
yeah.
she's first of all, she's going to be pissed. And she's going to be hurt.
Gonna
she's
going to
take it seriously. She's going to take it
well,
seriously.
She was not exactly kind to me either. So I'm just, you know, giving as good as I got.
All right. I'm going to read your email. Sam, this is at 12:35 p.m. Sam, you skip me again. Two Isabels now since my last appearance. First, you lose my theme song, and now this. I know you've been traveling, etc., but are you unhappy with my performance as the film guy? Have you gotten negative feedback? I can take it. Tell me that Isabel is more popular than me, and I will understand. I'm an adult. You know what? What's amazing is that everything you've written prior to that completely belies that short phrase.
Keep reading.
And I like her, too. She's funny, and maybe I'm not funny enough and too serious about art and crap. I was ready, though. No need to read this on air or mention it.
Yeah, exactly. But I knew it was going that way.
I saw the email, and then you're writing like you think you're having a conversation with me as I'm on air, as you're emailing me. And the only reason I know that you were emailing is because it kept popping up out of my Outlook, preview thing.
I'm not mad.
I'm hurt.
Get away.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Water under the bridge, Sam. Water under the bridge.
Yeah, no, I'm perfectly willing to allow that to construct that bridge and to allow your water run underneath there. Sometimes the schedule gets messed up. I mean, I've been running around for the past like 4 weeks. I don't know where I don't know. Up is down. Down is up. You wouldn't believe it.
Look, Irene was right though. There are no mistakes. So it says something about what you're doing. You prefer her? That's fine. Hey, I can take it.
You know, I'm leaning too much on that music, but that's the I got a new bad joke music. Here it is. Long drum roll. Uber Alles. All right.
Oh, a new version of
it's Uber Alles.
Uber Alles, yeah, very good. I like that.
Yeah.
So, Matthew,
what was the film?
Here's the last thing I want to tell you. Here's just the last cap on that.
There we go.
Don't put it on Isabel, because I don't blame her at all. And you set this thing.
I
up
wasn't
like,
blaming
He's all
Isabel.
Mad at you.
What?
Okay,
I wasn't blaming I think
that's
Isabel.
How it comes out.
Who was putting it on Isabel?
I just feel like you made her defensive because you were saying like, oh, now Matthew's all mad. And she's just like, what?
Well, that's just, what? Well, you want to do that impression of her again?
What? Huh? Sam, I don't want to talk about Michael.
Oh, my God. That is fantastic. Hey, you remember what we did to Chris Rosen? Long time. We have a lot of new listeners on Fridays. And since back in the old days when we had Chris Rosen on, who was a former board op and now works at Movie Line or Movie Phone or one of these things, and he pretended like he was a movie reviewer for months and months and months, and I was amazed at how bad the movies he was suggesting were, until one day he sort of admits, like, no, I'm not a movie reviewer. I just do editing. I do editing for a website. And so I got rather upset. And then Kyle, who does the tech for this, had developed an entire Chris Rosen impersonation. And so we invited, and he called in one time to do it. Rosen never listened to the show, so he didn't know that it was going on. And so we called up Chris Rosen one time. And Kyle, we had Kyle on the line as well. And so I would ask questions of Rosen, but Kyle would answer, and Rosen got pissed. He thought that we had recorded him. He didn't even realize it wasn't his own voice. He thought that we had recorded him, and we were playing back the recording of him. And he got very pissed. He sort of hung up, and then he would never come back on again.
Yeah, that's a shame, actually, because he was hilarious.
Are you serious? No, you were enraged by that guy.
Well, he was certainly not in any way somebody that I'd want to take movie advice from. But the bit was hilarious, listening to you go off on him when he would recommend something akin to, I don't know, what was it, The Hangover, Charlie's Angels, something really bad.
Oh, yeah, always horrible. No. Horrible.
Yeah, and but his total apathy, it's like you can't make that up. It was pretty funny. But, you know, I think this show actually benefits from recommending some actually good movies to some people, you know? Like, you got an intelligent crowd out there that are inquisitive and want to see something different and maybe a little bit out of the mainstream. So I think it does a good service to do that, take this thing seriously.
Okay. All right. I see what your plan is, to kiss the collective buttocks of the audience and then ingratiate yourself in that way. All right. Good for you. So what was the movie that you recommended last week?
The time before I was on, I recommended for you to watch Drive.
Yeah, but that was the one that I couldn't watch with Nikki around, right? Because she wouldn't let me watch that. Drive.
So
You know what, dude? I didn't watch it yet, but it's still on my list.
That's fine. You're going to like it. It's a bit of a genre movie. It's not like a deep, super deep thinker, but it's told well.
You don't have to apologize.
Albert Brooks, your guy,
that
in
type
it.
Of thing.
Okay.
All right.
Well, you know, I feel like I want to recommend to you movies that you'll actually watch, but I also want to have movies that are good.
Right, you want to maintain a certain amount of pretense. You know, I get it.
The integrity is what I would use, but you know, pretense. You know, I can see how the line is blurred there.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I can assure you right now that when you get to be my age, all you're doing is looking to how can I sell off my integrity to the highest bidder. Believe me.
Right.
Believe me.
You know, if you want to pay me, I'll recommend whatever you want. You know?
Well, let's not get carried away.
Put the music back on.
All right. So what do you got for us this week, Matthew Film Guy? You there?
Yeah. Okay. So this week I wanted to go a little bit back into time and something classic. And I don't know if you've actually seen this, but it's Frank Capra.
Is it going to be Moonraker?
It's actually going to be. I'm sorry, I can't hold the phone very well because both my arms are broken from high-fiving myself. But
when she recommended Moonraker last week,
recommended Moonraker, the popularly avowed worst Bond movie there is. Now, I'm not a Bond fan, but I got a place in my heart for those movies.
Yeah, that
I like what she tried to do with tying it into the. But I don't want to talk about what's her name. You know.
Yeah, no, I understand. Go ahead. What are you recommending?
So what I'm recommending is Frank Capra's classic 1941 film Meet John Doe. I think it's a very appropriate film leading into this election coming up in a couple weeks. And it's basically Gary Cooper and Barbara Stanwyck, who are amazing actors in their own rights, and together in this Frank Capra movie. Have you seen this one, Sam?
You know what? I it's been on my list.
Well, put it at the top, or at least at the bottom of the list I've given you.
Okay.
And it's about a popular movement that gets started based on a circulation prank by a newspaper, and it turns into this populist movement that this guy John Doe, that the character that they create, actually starts to become the head of. But he's like a patsy for all these big business interests, and it turns out to be a sort of I don't want to give too much away, but it winds up being a sort of feint for a third party that's actually a fascist party in the early 40s. Mm. And Capper was concerned with the rise of fascism in Europe and how it happens and how it comes from people's actually innocent and sort of, you know, honest desires for the things that they want out of a society, but how it gets corrupted. And it's basically all about individualism and people's true nature, that which is good, but how easily it's corrupted by others and social pressure and fear and a groupthink. And I think it's amazing to watch it, especially in the light of all the crap that's gone on with this, you know, with the post-Citizens United amount of propaganda that we've been subjected to. And I think you really like it. It's also funny. It's also touching and moving. It believes in people, but it's cynical in a way, too. I mean, a lot of people think of Capper as a kind of cinematic Norman Rockwell, but that's the furthest thing from the truth. He's dark and asking really twisted questions about human nature and has a very jaundiced eye to all the things that are in there, too, like hope and faith and, you know, folksy wisdom and all that kind of thing.
It sounds like, am I wrong in saying that, like, you know, Joe the Plumber, the Tea Party? I mean,
it's such an interesting thing to see it in the light of the Tea Party because, you know, it actually starts off as much more actively grassroots than that. So it doesn't have the exact same sort of DNA as how we understand the Tea Party. But eventually you see that this newspaper prank turns into a popular grassroots movement that is then co-opted by the owner of that newspaper. And yeah, there are some storylines that are similar to that, but it's also he collaborates with labor leaders and, you know, Capra sort of is equally critical of all collective sort of groupthink, whether it's left or right. Mm. And originally the John Doe groups that start up are not allowed to be about politics, and that's where the film kind of comes to a head when he reveals, like, we're starting a third party. So it's starts off innocent and then it gets corrupted and then it has somewhat of a muddled ending, which actually I understand that Capra was dissatisfied with this and he shot 5 different endings for this movie because he wasn't sure how it should go. And he learned the lessons from this that he actually went into making his next film, which you may have heard of, It's a Wonderful Life, about how an individual can affect society or can't.
Nope. Never heard of it.
Never heard of it? Oh.
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's on every year around Christmas.
What's
the holiday?
Christmas?
Celebrated for Jesus. Jesus was a Jewish.
What did he learn about? I mean, when you say that he learned from making those endings, what did he learn? Write the ending first.
Well, you know, I think my take on what I feel like that is what he learned is that he made a movie where the happy ending is almost tacked on. You know, like if you watch It's a Wonderful Life, everyone suddenly just sort of spontaneously comes to his rescue. And it was sort of in the style of Hollywood directors they had to have a happy ending.
Right.
But if they wanted to have a sort of artistic take, they would make it just really outrageously happy. And you could take it that way, or if you were thinking.
Right. They
more
just, they're going 50 miles an hour in a certain direction, and then they just immediately stop on a dime and just go. The end, Deus Machina, you know, Ex Machina.
Right, exactly. And in a way, that's what It's a Wonderful Life ends, and Meet John Doe in a way ends that way too. But I really think that you'll be interested in Meet John Doe just because it's all about this kind of like, you know, how a person is smart, but people collectively are more stupid. You know, that mob thinking is one step away from fascism or one step away from, you know, just giving up your sort of autonomy. And that can come from the left or the right.
Well, Matthew, I think that's a fascinating recommendation. It sounds interesting. It sounds like a good film. It certainly has resonance in this day and age. I think you once again have shown why you are worthy an appearance on this program every month or 6 to 8 weeks. Come on. No, of course, Matthew. You know how much I enjoy hearing from you, and I appreciate your insight. And you know, it's good to have like a dry segment that is sort of full of pretense. It gives the show a certain amount of credibility.
Yeah, you need fiber. Wait, what?
This is it's Casual Friday, and that's okay. It's okay that you know.
Yeah.
No, I think that's good. Hey. People really appreciate it.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Maybe, and, you know, what we should do is we're going to put out a poll, actually. And if you are a non-member of the program, we're going to be putting out a poll. We're going to be sending it to you. We're going to have a members poll soon, too. But we're going to be putting out sending out a poll, and it's going to help us. We have a lot of questions that are basically geared towards how we structure the show, what people like about the show, what they don't like about it. Maybe one of the questions we should put on the poll is, you know, do a head-to-head. Who do you like better, Isabel or Matthew?
Sure. I mean, I happen to think we both bring good but separate things.
Don't campaign for it, Matthew, because people that could backlash. Don't campaign for it. I'm just saying that would be an interesting experiment also to see how both of you take it emotionally when you see the numbers.
I'm totally into it. No, I can take it.
All right. Well, folks, if you get the poll, make sure that you at least answer the questions. I don't care if you vote. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
I'll drop Matthew like a hot potato if I see the numbers justify it.
Sure.
With all due respect.
I'll understand. No, I understand completely. I want your
You know I won't do that. Matthew Film Guy, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Sam. It's
my
pleasure.
Was that too abrupt?
No, that was great. I felt gently cradled out of the show.
Well, sir, consider yourself cradled. Matthew Film Guy, everybody. Once again, with a great, look at that. Frank Capra's Meet John Doe. Frank Capra's Meet John Doe. Matthew, we'll talk to you again next week. Not next week, but the next time. All right, buddy. Appreciate
it. I'm not going to wait. Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, folks. That is our program for today. Members will be getting immediately following this. I believe if they don't get it now, you'll get it midway through the weekend. We're going to post it. The audio from the debate that I engaged in last night, Thursday night, against Stéphane Malieu, one of the big YouTube libertarians. And we'll be back on Monday. We're going to be talking to Fred Kaufman about his new book, Bet the Farm, How Food Stopped Being Food. Until then, have a great weekend, folks.